This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Today's episode, we're joined by Jeff Wilson, a serial entrepreneur who sold his last prefab modular company and is now the founder and CEO of Jupe. Jeff, welcome to the episode.
Glad to be here.
So Jeff, you've got a crazy story. I don't even know where to begin with you. Why don't you give us a very quick high-level version?
Born in Texas, lived all over, including in a dumpster for a year.
And you were called Professor Dumpster too, is that right?
Yeah, I also go by Professor Dumpster. Some people, in fact, my industrial designer still calls me that. And actually, the whole living in the dumpster thing led in some ways to what I'm doing now. So had that former prefab company and now Jupe.
Great. So you are a professor. And you've published a lot of academic papers. You've been known as one of the top assistant professors in the University of Texas system. You were focused on environmental science, is that right?
That's right.
So how did you go from that to this?
Yeah, it really was through the dumpster. You know, I had gotten a little bored with what I was doing academically. You know, as much as intra-urban particulate concentrations are just fascinating from a publication standpoint. And so, yeah, I went to the university and said, hey, I'd like to live in a symbol of trash and play this character called Professor Dumpster and educate school kids about living on less. And I learned a lot about code and zoning, as you might when you're living in a trash can, and about the whole sort of crisis around affordable housing, and said, hey, this is ridiculous. I'm going to go out and try to build a housing product to solve some of these problems.
Now, you came up with the idea of building the product whilst you were going through the experience of being in a shelter, or did you decide this was the grand plan? You're going to prove out the product and then, you know, take it out.
Yeah, the, you know, as you do when you're lying in your dumpster at night with the top popped, staring up at the stars, sometimes you come up with ideas that aren't so good. But I think this idea was a good one. Went to a few friends that were in the startup world, and they said, hey, man, you should quit your job as a professor, the most stable job in the universe, and you should go do something, you know, adamant or similar to like sticking your hand in a blender, which is being a hardware startup founder. And that's what I did.
And here you are then. So tell us about the last startup.
Both hands. Yeah.
So tell us about the last company you sold.
Yeah, so Casita was meant to be a kind of iPhone of housing, right? So we had a software platform. We had the hardware we were building, a sort of ADU backyard home, and integrated both of those together. And the idea was, let's set out and solve affordable housing. And that turns out to be a bigger problem than I thought. And, you know, part of the issue was we did not choose the correct go-to-market strategy, right? I didn't realize how slow government work was and getting a true affordable solution out there. So the people that bought Casita actually are using it in a hospitality space, which is how we've really started Jupe, was starting in a higher octane, faster space and then developing the underlying technology to solve the displaced persons issue worldwide.
So tell us a bit about the affordable housing crisis. I'll tell you, most of the time you have this bias where there's a lot of tech entrepreneurs living in great high-rise buildings, building startups that target, you know, class A type of tenants. The real problem worth solving is how people live around the world. And we have a big affordable housing crisis, not just in the US, but globally. Could you give us some stats and teach us a few things about what's going on?
Well, you know, beyond the statistics that have frankly been accelerated during COVID, or at least the disparities, and you know, when aid ends, right, I think you're going to see a lot more folks, that a widening even more of that gap and more folks on the street. I think the underlying issue here and why it hasn't been solved are a couple of problems. Just starting with the capital stack, right? When you are trying to solve a large issue that requires hardware, you know, the venture capital stack isn't going to be patient enough to go after a very big problem like that. And you're way too early when you're doing something innovative to get sort of bank money, more conservative capital. So that's one issue. But I think the larger issue is that a problem like the affordable housing problem is one that people come at from one vector. So you might be innovating on, say, the space of co-living. Or you may be innovating on 3D prefab modular kind of housing. Or you may be innovating on financing. The problem with affordable housing is it's not like solving a puzzle by sliding a piece in. It's more like a Rubik's Cube, right? And so you've got a plane that is financing. You've got a plane that is tech innovation. You've got a plane that is politics. And then you've got planes that no other industry really has, like NIMBYism, right? Where else, like Tesla, when have you ever been told, well, maybe in some situations, but that I don't like how your car looks next door, so I'm going to shut it down, right? Shut down you being able to put that car there. And so, following this analogy, you might solve one complete side of that Rubik's Cube, but usually you're not aware of what's on those adjacent planes, and definitely not aware of what's on the backside of the moon. And so solving that issue...
NIMBYism here means not in my backyard, just for the benefit.
Oh, right. Yeah, NIMBYism means not in my backyard. So, you know, out here in California in some jurisdictions, if you don't like something that's happening in the neighborhood, you can actually call for a vote, and one person can essentially shut down a project. So there are all of these things interacting, and they're all too big to get your hands around at one time. So my strategy with Jupe is let's pick something very, very small and slide it into the areas with the most momentum and the least drag. And then begin to solve for some of those things while we're going on the other surfaces of the Rubik's Cube. But doing it in a small way, baby steps.
Now, how do you deal with these other aspects of politics and NIMBYism, two things that are inevitably outside of your control and can submarine where you want to go?
Well, I mean, as it's been said, like, don't go there, right? And by there, you know, we are not initially moving into the cities. Our initial play is outside of the city. So that gets rid of a lot of the politics, right? Because the politics aren't as dense out in the counties. And you also get rid of a lot of the NIMBYism, right? So the next ranch over, you're probably less likely to complain about some little temporary structures than you would next to your $3 million home in West Hollywood, right? So we're starting in an area where there's low NIMBY drag, where there's also low permitting drag, right? And also a sort of higher octane type of return, that of hospitality. What we will do then, as we dial in the financing, as we're able to get more conservative money, as we're able to get these permitted at the state level, as we're able to adapt the shape and look of them, so it'll be less of a sort of NIMBY type, something that would upset a neighbor, we will begin moving more and more into the cities. Right, and more towards sort of what exists today in form of architecture. So that's the strategy. It's a little bit boil the frog. It's a little bit going to where's the lowest hanging fruit.
Got it. When we look at the affordability and housing crisis, can the government solve this? Is the government set up today to solve these challenges? Society leans on governments. And you've obviously, you know, being a professor and studied this, you know, ecosystem, there's layers and layers of bureaucracy, and there's a lack of understanding of the core problem at heart. And some of these policies hold back startups, hold back companies trying to make progress. Can you speak to any of the effectiveness of government and your thoughts on that?
You know, I think what government can do is be more flexible in terms of who they allow to get involved in affordable housing, where, and how fast, right? Sure. So one example that we've seen in some of the cities, I think one of the earlier ones was maybe Minneapolis-St. Paul, was a relaxing of the multifamily zoning guidelines. So basically they said, look, you want to build a multifamily complex? We used to just let you do it in these few blocks downtown. Now the game's open, right? If you want to build a multifamily complex in the middle of a single family, you know, home neighborhood, you can do that, right? And so that sort of loosens things up in space, loosening things up in time. If you want to do affordable housing, right, and you want to have a percentage of it as affordable, you should go to the front of the line in terms of, you know, passing code. The other thing is when you're talking about what kind of affordable housing, there is a group out of San Francisco that actually there's a lot of chapters now called YIMBY. So we talked about not in my backyard, NIMBY. They are yes in my backyard. And one of their early mantras by sort of their leader, a woman named Sonia Trouse in the Bay Area, was build, baby, build. And the idea was that more housing was needed at all levels in a place like the Bay Area just to build enough supply to offset, you know, the meager demand. I think it was something like five people were moving to the Bay Area for every one new housing unit built. So those are some ideas. I mean, it's super complicated, and it may not even be a Rubik's Cube. It may be more like one of those 20-sided Dungeon and Dragons dice. Of what we're talking about in the number of surfaces here.
And going back to your point about government should be involved in this and should decide who plays in the ecosystem, surely you want as many people attacking this problem as possible, and you want as many competitors out there, because ultimately you're trying to provide a good for the mass market and you want to drive the prices down. Why do you feel that there should be more control? Is it because of what can go wrong if a startup comes in and makes promises? I mean, we've seen some companies get involved in critical areas like the vaccine distribution. And, you know, government trusts a vendor, it can go very wrong. Where does your view come from when it comes to affordable housing and the government's role and startups, how they relate to housing?
Yeah, and to be clear, I was asking government to step out of it a bit more, not insert themselves. So stepping out of it in that case would be loosening up zoning restrictions, right? Not allowing sort of one NIMBY vote to shut down a project. You know, in terms of, you know, other things, in terms of innovation, they probably need to step out of it a bit more rather than stepping in.
Right, because it hasn't worked to date. And it's nonsense and crazy to keep continuing, and all leaders and politicians are constantly talking about this as a top priority, but what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, like, these laws, the zoning laws, the code laws, you know, were some of them were created for very good reasons, like keeping people safe and having homes not burned down. I can get into that as an issue in a minute as well. But they were also created just for some terrible reasons. Namely redlining and racism, right? One of the oldest forms and hardest to break in terms of institutionalized racism is real estate and the zoning laws that go along with it. So, for example, in Austin, Texas, when a lot of the zoning rules were being created, I think it was in the 20s or 30s, they basically said, look, if you are black or brown or just not really white, you don't have to move to the east side of what is now Interstate 35, the 35. But if you don't move over there really, really quick, you're not going to be able to do a few things like go to school, get access to water, get access to electricity, right? So they basically zoned and coded and created rules that moved a whole population across the city. Now, that's the worst things that happen from zoning code. It also is there for some basic reasons to keep us safe. So essentially, I mean, I kind of feel like if you're safe, then it's almost as if zoning should be a lot more open. There are some other ways they can insert themselves or create incentives around public transport. You see this done a lot near public transport. They'll give incentives for affordable housing. And then also getting involved in other things that sort of are covariant with affordability and zoning, which is like food deserts, right? And getting involved in that. So long answer, but it's a very long-standing problem that we need to fix quickly.
So we're looking at a optimistic future here. There's a lot more focus on diversity, especially within government. Do you think that will change things? Is diversity enough? Or is it just that government is so bureaucratic and things move at such a slow pace that it will be difficult to unwind things because it's an institution now and things are set and it's difficult to move? People complain about real estate being very slow. There can be no slower area and frustrating area than something like dealing with the zoning issues. Can it change, or are we embedded and we've built too much around it now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think diversity is actually key. And it may be as important here as it is anywhere. I think part of the issue is that the folks that are creating these laws, right, have traditionally not been from the groups where they are creating the laws, right? So if you've got a bunch of folks from, you know, middle class, upper middle class, wealthy families, right, either consulting or neighborhoods consulting on creating the laws or actually staffing and creating those laws, there's just not the level of empathy about how those laws affect populations and generations. And, mobility between socioeconomic mobility. So I actually think that diversity is, it is everywhere, but I think it's really, really, really important here.
Yeah, and diversity in real estate, in prop tech, in companies overall is essential. I mean, we're also seeing a shift. It's not just, it might be easy to assume, okay, we need more women in power simply because, there's slightly more or around half the population. That's not the fact. The fact is also that we have too many men, and some people call it toxic masculinity, who are making decisions. And there's a sort of an imbalance in society today. But this is more so unsustainable because of population growth and aging. And the sheer fact is women outlive men. And there will be a shift over the next decade and a few decades where there'll be more and more women controlling more of the world's wealth as well. A, as a byproduct of seeing more female leaders take, roles and create companies and make money, but also simply due to inheritance and due to the fact that, you know, if the male dies 6 years on average earlier than the female, then you're going to have women who control more of the world's spending. So, I mean, that's one example on a macro level, just with gender.